This is the Reading Instruction Show. I'm your host, as always, Dr. Andy Johnson. Topic of today's podcast is cognitive science and reading. So let's see if we can do a little bit of learning today. Now, neuroscience is a study of the nervous system, including the brain, spinal cord, and neurons. The neuroscience of reading looks at how the brain functions during reading, using imaging techniques to detect the flow of blood and electrical energy. Now, cognitive science is based on the word cognition, which means thinking. Cognitive science looks at human thinking. Here, one studies the physical brain as it thinks, and the other studies the thinking the brain does. But we can't observe thinking directly. We can only observe the effects of thinking. Thus, both fields look at the effects of thinking to make deductions about thinking itself. Now, this podcast, the first part, is designed to help you understand how reading works from a purely cognitive perspective. This provides an important context for understanding the theory of orthographic mapping, which I have described elsewhere. Orthographic mapping is a theory based on logical deductions made from research. And the questions we must ask about this theory are: how robust is the theory? How valid are the data upon which it is based? And how logical are the deductions? And my conclusions are not very, not very, and not very. But getting ahead of myself, let's first look at memory from a cognitive perspective. Storage tanks. Memory can be thought of as a storage tank. The informational processing model, sometimes known as the standard memory model, describes three types of storage tanks: sensory memory, short-term memory, and long-term memory. Each tank has a different capacity and duration, and each tank is used a bit differently in reading. Sense memory. Sense memory, sensory memory, or sensory registrar is where your original sense data is perceived. In the case of reading, letters and words are perceived here. It has an unlimited capacity, but a very short duration. Sense memory retains an exact copy of all the stimuli you perceive, but you can hold it for only 1 to 3 seconds. And after this, it quickly fades away. Short-term memory. Now, while the term short-term memory and working memory are often used synonymously, technically they are different. Short-term memory is like a small storage tank for selected data that's perceived in sensory memory. It has a limited capacity, holding only 7 ± 2 bits of information. And this means that most people can hold 7 bits of information, some can hold up to 9 bits, and some only as few as 5 bits. And that's not a lot of information bits. Also, the duration here is not very long. Without some sort of elaboration or rehearsal, this information starts to fade away after 15 seconds. Holding more bits. Chunking enables you to hold more information in the limited space in the short-term memory holding tank. This is the process of organizing bits of data into meaningful larger holes. Now, to illustrate, in your short-term memory holding tank, you could hold on to these 8 letters, and here they are: I, T, I, S, A, C, A, and T. Or you could hold on to these 4 words: it is a cat, That's what those letters spelled. Or you could hold on to the single idea of a cat with the related associations. Letters, words, or meaning. Of the three, meaning carries the most information. Holding the meaning created by reading in your short-term memory storage tank is much more efficient than holding the letters you're reading. Now, expert readers use very few letter clues to recognize words as they read. Instead, much like gas flowing into a carburetor to mix with air and create power, information flows into short-term memory to mix with letters and create meaning. This carburation of letters and information provides more space in short-term memory to focus on understanding what's being read. And as I've said many times before, and I'll say it in the future, this does not mean that we ignore phonics. Rather, we combine phonics with our natural ability to use semantic and syntactical information to create reading power. Working memory. Where short-term memory is a passive receptacle, working memory is an active space within short-term memory used to work with information. This is where you add, analyze, organize, evaluate, or restructure data, as well as make meaningful connections. Working memory is also the place where metacognition takes place. And metacognition means thinking about thinking. Here you monitor your own thoughts to check for understanding. This happens during reading, when you ask yourself questions such as, do I understand what I'm reading? Does this make sense? Do I need to read this paragraph again? Metacognition is also used to ask higher level questions such as, what's the main point here? How is this like something else I've learned? Does this make sense? Did Andy just compare reading to a carburetor? Automaticity. This is the act of performing a procedure or cognitive operation without thinking about it or with very little conscious awareness. In other words, the thinking processes involved with the procedure are automatic. And the best example of this is driving a car. Now, as we drive, most of us don't have to consciously think about pressing the gas pedal or the brake pedal or steering the wheel. We respond to the curves and stop signs we encounter automatically with very little conscious attention. Automaticity frees up space in short-term memory, allowing us to devote more attention to other things such as road conditions or other cars or our cell phones. Developing automaticity with any skill enables us to devote more space in short-term memory to high-level thinking. And the goal is for children to be able to automatically recognize words while reading. In this way, they're better able to analyze and evaluate ideas and engage in high-level thinking as they read. And automaticity is important for any cognitive operation related to reading, such as comprehension, critical thinking, metacognition, or the application of strategies. Long-term memory. This is where all your memories are stored, episodic, semantic, and procedural memories, and we'll talk about this in just a minute. The long-term memory storage tank has an almost unlimited capacity to store information for an almost unlimited duration. This means that everything we've ever experienced is tucked away in our brain somewhere. So why do we forget? It's not a matter of storage, rather of retrieval. That is, the information is still in our memory, tucked away someplace. We just have a hard time getting access to some of it because lots of other stuff gets in the way. But given the right stimuli, that information is accessible. Now think of how a song or a smell suddenly brings up memories of events and places long past. The storage locker analogy. Putting data in and taking it out of long-term memory is very much like putting things in a rented storage locker. Three important terms in this process are encoding, storage, and retrieval. Encoding is the process of organizing and putting information into long-term memory. And this is like gathering up all your things, sorting them into plastic storage bins with labels, and putting them into the storage locker in an organized fashion. Storage is the actual holding of information in long-term memory. This is like a storage locker filled with boxes and bins. And retrieval is getting access to information found in long-term memory and pulling it back out into short-term memory. And this is like going into the storage locker, getting specific things from the boxes or bins, and then taking them out so that you can see what they are and use them. Now, if the things are organized and stored next to related things in the storage locker, it's much easier to find and retrieve exactly what you need. And lucky for us, our brains naturally do this. They organize new information and experiences around related things, not around letters or letter patterns. Now, let's look at the two-way flow of information. Information does not just flow from your sense memory to short-term memory and up to long-term memory. In the act of perception and coding and retrieval, information flows down from long-term memory to short-term memory to even sense memory. And this replicates the flow of information described in the neurocognitive model of reading. There's a two-way flow of information, most of it coming down from the cortex or from long-term memory. So, long-term to short-term. Information in long-term memory flows into short-term memory to help us understand and encode it. And the more information you have about what you encounter, the easier this becomes. For example, Dave Hansen knows a lot about pipe fittings. When he encounters new information related to this topic, he's able to understand and encode it quickly and efficiently without much memory loss. And when he reads technical manuals related to pipe fittings, he reads effortlessly, and he's able to comprehend and remember much of it. And it's not because his brain functions any better than yours. Instead, it's because his long-term memory is full of pipe fitting knowledge. This enables him to easily encode, store, and retrieve pipe fitting information. He knows exactly what to look for, where it's stored, and how it's connected to other things. However, when his same brain is exposed to information about cryptozoology, encoding seems to be slow, inefficient, and labored with much memory loss and very little understanding. This is because there's very little information in Dave Hansen's long-term memory related to this subject. The same brain that was interacting with pipe-thinning information is now interacting with cryptozoology information, yet meaning and understanding very greatly. In one instance, he's a very capable reader, and in the other, he's a struggling reader. The important difference is the type and amount of knowledge in long-term memory. So, long-term memory to sense memory and perception. We also use information in long-term memory, the knowledge there, to help us perceive and attend to stimuli in sensory memory. In terms of reading, the knowledge in Dave Hansen's head related to pipe fittings helps him to easily perceive and identify important pipe fitting words and concepts. He's able to perceive and recognize them much faster than he would words and concepts related to cryptozoology. In the context of pipe fittings, he needs fewer letters to recognize content words. And again, the knowledge in long-term memory enhances this process. So let's look at types of memories finally. We have three types of memory, all of which are stored a bit differently in long-term memory: episodic memory, semantic memory, and procedural memory. And a very simple explanation of these with an example are included here. Episodic memory are memories of the episodes in your life. These include what you did last week, as well as memories of things you did or things that happened to you growing up. Remembering the time that an elephant stepped on your toe would be an example of an episodic memory. Semantic memory refers to meaning. This is a memory of meaningful things such as facts, information, and knowledge. Remembering that there are three species of elephants, or that elephants are the largest land animal, would be examples of semantic memory. And procedural memory. This is your implicit memory of how to do things. This memory is unconscious. Remembering how to type the word elephant is an example of procedural memory. And if you are proficient in keyboarding, you don't have to consciously think about where your fingers should go. So what about orthographic memory, orthographic mapping? I have yet to encounter anything in the field of cognitive psychology that mentions a special memory for the storage of words. And this idea of orthographic mapping does not fit well within this standard information or standard memory model or the information processing model. This has been the Reading Instruction Show. I am your host, Dr. Andy Johnson.